Hi, Mark DeLuzio here for episode 62. The title of this episode, Why Was the Danaher Business System Successful? The answer may surprise you. I get a lot of questions about the Danaher Business System and the success we had with it and all the different things that we did with it. You know, you got to remember, Danaher was a very varied company in terms of industries and products. We made all kinds of different things. So it wasn't just one car company per se. It was a company that made anything from large UPS units to two periscopes a year to a million sockets a day for Sears Craftsman hand tools. We had all kinds of electronics and temperature controllers and counters and test and measurement systems. And we had, you know, any kind of manufacturing process you could probably think of. We had, be it plating, be it, you know, heat treat, surface mount, wave soldering. We had all kinds of injection molding, hot forging, cold forming, impact forging, all kinds of CNC type, vertical, horizontal, all kinds of lathes. We had everything, okay? And it was a good place to learn because you got to apply, the Toyota Production System principles to all these different types of environments. However, one thing I want to bring you back to, and you probably heard me talk about this before, was that on my first trip to Japan in 1990, April of 1990, unfortunately, that's the month that Takashi Ono passed away, so I never got to meet Ono. But I, you know, obviously we were, you probably know, trained by his first lieutenants, Nakao, Iwata, Takanaka, Niwa, and Nino. Many of them are gone now, but they were our mentors. Nakao's still kicking around, and these were the first-hand lieutenants of Takashi Ono. And we learned the Toyota Production System from them. But one of the things I learned when I went first to Japan, of many trips to Toyota and other places with Shingijutsu, is that a Toyota executive at Toyota City told us that, you know, I asked the question, I said, you know, why do you guys allow all of your competition into your factories? And the answer was, what they need to know, they cannot see. And I had no idea what he meant back then. It took me a few years to figure it out. They need to know, they cannot see. And as I got through learning a little bit more, as time went on, I started to see the intangibles, because you could put all the hard side stuff in, and this seems to be where everybody focuses on. They focus on the hard stuff, the single minute exchange of die, the standard work, the andon lights, the kanbans, the yellow lines on the floor, the posters on the wall, the Gemba boards. They focus on that, but they don't talk about the behavioral aspects and the culture and the behavior that drives all of the hardware that we put in. So maybe all the tools you could think about as hardware, and the software is all the behavioral stuff, the culture, the sense of urgency, the adherence to principles. Okay. If you don't adhere to the fundamental principles and you're always in violation of them, you're never going to be lean. Okay. So that's what I surmised they meant. And also this whole thing that we all talk about is respect for people. And that's a real key thing too. Now, let me start by saying this, that, you know, I don't want to give the impression that Danaher, and when I was part of, you know, overseeing creating the Danaher Business System, that we had this infinite wisdom and that we had a crystal ball and we made no mistakes and we could do no wrong. And we just had this innate ability to get it right. That is so far from the truth, I want to tell you right now. And there are so many out there today, even in more mediocre performing companies, that want to claim credit for all the great things they did. And I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. Okay. We had a lot of starts and stops. We had a lot of trial and error. We made a lot of mistakes. In fact, one of the episodes, one of the presentations I've done is Humble Errors, the 10 mistakes I made in creating the Danaher Business System. And by the way, there were a lot more than 10. Okay. But we learned from them. Okay. So I don't want to give you the impression that we arrived and we had such great wisdom that, and we're so superior to any of you out there listening to this today. That wasn't the case at all. In some cases, and I'll talk about this, we fell into it. All right. By trial and error, we fell into, you know, I guess you can argue guessing the right answer. So when you start looking at what we did, what made the Danaher Business System successful was the stuff you couldn't see. Okay. Now, before I get more into that, I want to take you back to a movie back in 2008. And if you haven't seen this movie, check it out. It's called The Flash of Genius. It's a true story by an engineer who invented the intermittent windshield wiper. And it was played by Greg Kinnear, the engineer. He was the engineer. Okay. The engineer's name was a guy named Robert Kearns. And by the way, this whole thing ruined this guy's marriage and everything else, but he fought and fought on a principle. Wasn't all that interested in the money, but the principle that a large auto company, in this case it was Ford, stole his idea, and he fought them in court. He was his own attorney, and he went to court, and he won. And one of the part of the movie, which I found the most intriguing, was when the Ford engineer got on the witness stand, and the defense attorney questioned him. The questioning went like this: could you please tell me what was so unique and so different about, you know, Robert Kern's invention of the intermittent windshield wiper? And the Ford engineer responded this way. He said, "There's nothing new here. All the electronics, like the transistors, the capacitors, the wires, the relays, all that stuff has already been invented." He didn't invent anything that's in this intermittent windshield wiper. So we didn't steal anything. Matter of fact, we were using all these components before anyway, in all kinds of different applications. And so the defense thought he had a case and he won, right? Well, now the Robert Kearns, the engineer, played by Greg Kinnear, took over, and now it's his time to question the Ford engineer. And he handed him a book written by Edgar Allan Poe. I forget which one it was, but one of his masterpieces, right? And he handed the book to him, and he said, "Do you recognize this book as being a superior, you know, piece of literature?" And the engineer said, "Yes." "Well, do me a favor," he says, "why don't you open up the book and pick any word out you want in that book and just read it out loud?" So he did. He picked out a word. And the question then was, did Edgar Allan Poe invent that word? And the engineer said, "Well, no, I don't think so." "Okay, pick another word." And this happened 3 or 4 times. And at the end of all this, Robert Kearns said to the engineer, "Is it safe to say that Edgar Allan Poe didn't really invent any of the words that are in this masterpiece?" And he concluded, "Yes, that's probably true." "Okay. But isn't it how he assembled the words that created this masterpiece?" And right there, the case was over. And he ended up winning the case. Okay. That's how I look at the Danaher Business System. We really didn't invent anything in the Danaher Business System. Now, you know, everybody talks about tools, which, look, you got to be good at the tools, and you have to have the discipline to understand how and when and where to use them, okay? But the tools alone aren't going to get you where you need to be. The tools alone are not. Now, we didn't invent standard work. We didn't invent single-minute exchange of die, TPM, SMED. We didn't invent problem-solving. Yeah, we had our own way, and some of us thought we were smart enough that we had our own unique way to do problem solving, like we were inventing something, but we really didn't invent that. 5S, I mean, go down the list. Process mapping, I think we got pretty good at transactional process improvement, strategy deployment. We didn't invent that, except for we did find a way that worked for us because of what we wanted to do strategically. But none of this was invented by anybody at Danaher, including me, who was the architect over the whole thing. It was how we put this together and used it to drive value for our key stakeholders. And those key stakeholders were our employees, our customers, and our shareholders. Okay. And am I sitting here saying that we are stellar in all those departments? Absolutely not. There's a lot to be desired. All right. And quite frankly, we had some lousy leaders in Danaher that were great politicians and rose to the top that just, you know, hey, every company has those guys, right? And gals, because one of them was a gal that was an awful, awful leader, okay? We had them too. But over time, we kind of weeded those people out, all right? They didn't make it. I'm not trying to sit here and say that everybody that worked at Danaher was this, you know, God's gift to leadership and management. It's not the case at all. I want to be really honest about this. It's a lot of hard work. And a lot of the things that you're going through today, we had, okay? But we had leadership that understood overall the principles, and I'm going to get into this in a minute, but understood all of this so that just because we understood it didn't mean on day two we were there. We had to work for it. It's a lot of work. But we didn't do anything new. Okay. So a little backstory here with the Danaher Business System. So when I was asked to lead the charge for Danaher, do what, you know, my walking instructions from George Sherman, our CEO, God rest his soul, he said to me, do for Danaher what you guys did for Jake Brake, because Jake Brake in Bloomfield, Connecticut is where this all got started. Under George Konasaker as president and Art Byrne as a group executive, okay? And I came in as CFO for George Konasaker and eventually went into operations and ran the Asian business team, okay? Which had Hino Motors, which is part of Toyota. So what a great experience. That coupled with Nikao and Shingajitsu, we did the first 3P line, I believe, in the United States. It was like in 1990, okay? Prior to that, I invented now what we call lean accounting. I had the air cover to do this kind of stuff, to throw out this traditional cost accounting crap, standard costing and all that. Episode for another day, right? But I had the leadership to be able to say, yeah, what you're doing is the right thing to do. And I had the runway to do it, okay? But when I took over, it wasn't called the Danaher Business System. It was called the Danaher Production System, modeled after the Jacobs production system, which was modeled, very poorly, by the way, modeled after the Toyota production system. And what it was all the hard tools, okay? All the hard tools, standard work. Matter of fact, there weren't many tools in it at all, quite frankly. I had to develop all that when I got to the corporate office, okay? Anyway, why did we change it from the production system to the business system? Here's the reason. We were sitting around, we said, hey, look, there's waste in every department. There's waste in finance. There's waste in marketing, HR, engineering. You know, go down every function. Yeah, that's a great idea. So let's call it a business system so we can take all the waste out of these departments. Because we know, and you know, that there's waste everywhere, right? Matter of fact, a lot of the waste, well, we did realize a lot of the waste that showed up on the shop floor resonated from some other area, okay? And so whether it be a design issue when it, as it related to quality or some kind of commercial issue relating to on-time delivery, forecasting, inventory levels, all that. Anyway, so we changed it because of that. And so we called it the Danaher Business System. However, as I introduced policy deployment, which I now call strategy deployment. Some people call it ocean planning, Hoshin Kanri. We learned this from the Japanese, not Shingajitsu, by the way. And we started playing around with it. And it took us about 3 or 4 years to start getting the golf swing down as to how this was supposed to work. And by the way, our view on strategy deployment or policy deployment is totally different than what most people teach today. Okay, and I'll hold off on that and talk about that in another episode. But when you look at that, we started realizing that you cannot optimize any one function without sub-optimizing the enterprise. So people would ask me, what kind of company was Danaher? Was it a manufacturing company? Was it a, you know, engineering related? Some companies have more of a marketing twist to them. And my answer always was none of that. Because we didn't want to become the best manufacturing company in the world, or the best engineering in the world, or the best HR department in the world. We wanted to become the best enterprise in the world. Meaning that in order to do that, all functions had to operate in unison, in concert with each other. And we truly believe that if you try to optimize any one function, you will sub-optimize the enterprise. I can guarantee you. Because you're not working across. And there are some companies out there today that I'm dealing with that have so many silos in them. And each silo trying to optimize and having a counter effect on the other functions, operations, okay? So let me give you an example. I had a client that did mining, and we're down 550 meters underground in a mine, and I was going through all the Gemba board presentations, and on this particular Gemba board, they didn't hit their production goals in terms of tonnage that they had to produce. How many tons of ore did they have to produce? And they were recording that, and they were saying, you know, we didn't hit our number, blah, 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 blah. But nobody's talking about root cause. So that number was really a lagging indicator, okay? So I was just a guess, but I asked the question, well, can you tell us, like, what do you think the major reasons were for missing your goal? And the answer came back this way. The fuel injectors are failing on our trucks. Oh, okay. Have you recorded that? That's a little bit more of a leading indicator than a lagging indicator, right? So have you recorded that? Do you have that broken down? Have you looked at that? And the answer was no, okay. Because the Gemba board presentation didn't really suggest they do that. Okay, now if you're going to report all these numbers on a Gemba board and not use the number to solve problems, then you're wasting your time. Okay, so we started looking into this. And what we found, so we had them do Pareto analysis. I always like to start with Pareto. And we looked at it by truck. They had two fundamental types of trucks, Komatsu and Caterpillar. Let's do a Pareto on trucks. Let's do it based on model truck, on the type of engine. Let's do it based on driver. Let's do it based on shift. Let's do it based on geography in terms of where these trucks are operating, because maybe there's some play there. Let's do it based on injector type. Let's do a Pareto on supplier, okay? Anyway, to make a long story short, they did all these Paretos, and we put them up on a wall, and we let the Paretos talk to us. What do you guys see here, guys, you know? We found that 80% of the problems were from a knockoff Chinese supplier that they were using, okay? And that started telling us. That doesn't mean that was the issue, but that was a pretty good indicator that if most of the injectors that are failing are these Chinese knockoffs, and they're not original OEM parts, then that could be the issue, right? Well, sure enough, it was. And what we found out was another department, totally separate from the mine operation, was charged with buying all these parts, and they were incentivized based on price, on cost, okay? So they were looking for the cheapest cost. Well, sure enough, they got the cheapest cost. They bought this crap from China that was failing miserably. So here's a case where their objective was cost. The objective of the mine was tonnage, output, and never the two did meet. So you see what I'm saying? They optimized their department, because they got the lowest cost on the fuel injectors. but the organization failed. Okay. So when we put strategy deployment in place, we started learning the power of multifunctional teams that work together on any breakthrough. I don't care what breakthrough you talk about with strategy deployment, it's got to be multifunctional. Okay. It may not be obvious to you up front at first. If it's an engineering oriented type project, let's put a bunch of engineers on it. It's probably the worst thing you could do. Okay. I'm not saying you shouldn't have any engineers. I'm just saying just solely one function. Problems never get solved in one function. That's been my experience. And problems usually get solved. The root cause of a problem anyway is found somewhere else from which the problem was discovered. Two key things that we talk about in problem solving. Okay. So all of these are the learnings that we did. We did all this learning on this concept of multifunctional teams, all pointing to the same objectives together, including the compensation side of this. And I'll be doing an episode, I think the next one I'm going to be doing is on compensation and how compensation systems could absolutely ruin your lean transformation. Okay. So there's an example of learning that we did. And if you break down the parts of the Danaher business system, first of all, if you put the Danaher business system on paper and compare it to any other system, I don't care what, you know, Larry Culp has this flight deck. There's nothing new there. Matter of fact, that stuff is decades old. There's nothing new on that. It's how Larry's going to use it and how he's going to lead it that makes a difference. You can't see that on a piece of paper, okay? And I hope he's successful with it. Hopefully they move out of this, everything's cost, 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 right? That's the old GE anyway. Everything was looked at through a cost lens, not from a quality lens, okay? Not from a service and delivery lens. It's how you use it, okay? So the five P's that were the framework of the Danaher business system, and let me just lay them out here for you. The first one was purpose. What is our purpose? What are we trying to do with this? Okay. The next is principles. The fundamental principles. Do our executives and leadership understand and live to the principles? For example, the principle of just in time. Are we violating just in time by trying to capitalize our profits and our costs into the balance sheet because of absorption accounting to make our profit and loss statement look good that particular month, knowing that we overproduced and created inventory that potentially is going to become obsolete or we're going to have to discount the heck out of it to sell later and all the carrying costs that goes along with inventory? Just because the accounting profit makes it look like you made money? Well, if we're going to do that, we're not abiding by the principles, okay? The respect for people principle is another one. Are we truly respecting our people? And do we even know what our people are looking for? We're going to say, yeah, we want to satisfy our employees. Do you even know what that means? All right? So executives have to start with the principles here and say, you know, are we living by them? And the answer is going to be no, of course not. Especially when you start off, but you've got to work your way towards adhering to these principles. There's a bunch of them. I'm not going to go through them now. The third P is people. Are we engaging our people? Are we truly solving problems, getting them to understand the problem solving process? Asking them for their opinion, getting their advice, bringing them in on Kaizens. It's their work anyway, and they're probably the best experts on what's going on down there anyway than anybody else. Because you and I can come up with the greatest solution, the most elegant, perfect solution. But if we're not bringing in the people who fundamentally are going to run the process, and they don't think there's ownership there, they're going to reject it. There's no question they're going to reject it. because it's not theirs, and you didn't ask them for their opinion, you didn't ask them for their input. And who the heck says you and I are right? I have experience that says the higher you go up in the organization, the quality of whatever solution that hierarchy offers decreases as you go up. Okay. How many times have you heard an executive say, I know what they should do, in a conference room, and they're five levels above where the problem's happening? Here's what we should do. And nobody has the guts to push back on the executive to say, no, that's not going to work. They just march off and do it because there could be some trust and ramification and psychological safety issues that you can't push back on the big guy. After all, he's the director. He's the vice president. He's the CEO. You can't push back on that person. Of course they're right, because look at where they are in the hierarchy. Okay. So those kind of things are what I'm talking about, the principles themselves. Never allowing a part or a piece of information to go to the next process unless you assure the quality. It's another principle. Okay. I'm going to go on these principles. We have a whole boot camp that teaches all this, these five P's. So we started with purpose. Why are we doing this? Is it just to make more money? Well, we're going to fail if that's all it is. To grow the business profitably, to provide job security and career advancement, that's a better purpose to me. And yeah, hey, by the way, while we're at it, let's make some money, right? I have nothing wrong with making money, because making money is a good thing for everybody, right? Then we go to principles, as I just discussed. Then we talk about people. And this is where the respect for people comes in, empowering people, okay? One of the worst disrespects you could do to your people is expect, roll out a big lean transformation and expect all these great improvements, but not providing the framework to do Kaizen. You haven't trained them. You haven't given them the time. There's a defense company I was working with a year or so ago. They were doing Kaizen at one of the divisions, right? One of the divisions, they said, yeah, we do Kaizen between 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock on Wednesday. That's it. Get back to work. We got too much product to put out. You don't have time for Kaizen. I'm not kidding you, okay? This is a company run by a bunch of engineers that didn't really appreciate the complexity of manufacturing. It was boring to them. They invented stuff that went to Mars, literally. Why would they be interested in one-piece flow and, in quality? Most of the problems were design issues, rearing their ugly head on the shop floor, but they didn't care about that because they're on to the next product, okay? So not providing the people the framework to problem solve and to do Kaizen. To me, problem solving is Kaizen. Every Kaizen I've done is a problem solving session. Okay. And then the next piece, so you've got purpose, principles, people, plan. What kind of planning are we doing? Not only strategic planning, but strategy deployment that takes that strategic plan and makes it reality. And how does that look? And what about a value stream plans? And what about a daily management plans? And what about all the other plans that we think about? And one of the important things about planning that we learned the hard way is that, everybody thinks, hey, I'm going to impress my boss and put down 25 things that my department or my area is doing. How are you going to win when you're doing 25 things? So when we teach strategy deployment, one of the things that we talk about is a conscious decision, and we write a contract out, say, this is what you're not going to work on, at least for the time being. For the next 6 months, for the next 12 months, we're not working on this because it's a resource game. I don't care what anybody says. This stuff just doesn't happen overnight. Okay? And one of the big failures with strategy deployment is that we try to do too much or we don't resource it, and we have all these collisions with our resources. Okay. And there's always that one person in the company that everybody wants on their team. That person has 300% load on their work schedule. Sooner or later, they burn out and they quit and they leave. And then all of a sudden, hey, where's Charlie? We need to find another Charlie. No, you don't. You need to find another manager that knows how to manage resources. Okay. So that's the people side. The plan side I talked about. And then the process. Okay, the process we're talking about, all the tools where everybody kind of starts with and stays with, and they don't come out of anywhere else but talking about the tools. That's usually where companies start, and it's where they kind of get stuck and they stay, and they don't think about any of the other P's, okay? You know, you've heard me talk, one of my episodes was about, I'm against lean audits. A lean corporate office going down and auditing all these companies. All the while saying that, oh yeah, the lean office is saying, yeah, these divisions of ours and these operations are our customer. I've never seen a customer get audited by their supplier in my 40 years in business. Never saw a customer be audited by a supplier. I mean, maybe it's happened, but I haven't seen it, okay? So how can the lean office look at their operations as a customer and then audit them? I think the audit should go the other way around. If they're truly a supplier, the operations should audit the lean office. Are you really helping me? Because most of them are not helpful. They don't know what to do, so what they do is they do these audits to show their boss that they're doing something and that they're moving the needle. And then they rank these companies on some kind of arbitrary, you know, platinum, gold, bronze, whatever, silver level, and force rank them. And the problem with that is there's always somebody on the bottom. Somebody's always getting shamed. Somebody's always on the bottom. Okay, I have a whole episode on this, okay? But we're looking, these audits typically look at tools. How well are you at SMED? How well are you at standard work? What if SMED's not a big play for your business, but you still get audited on it, okay? So I want to go outside into a non-business environment to give you an analogy. Back in Connecticut, I had two houses built. Let's call it House A and House B. House A was an unmitigated disaster in terms of quality. The roof leaked. The basement leaked. We had all kinds of issues with this. We had a bad roof. And it was a new house. Both these houses were brand new houses. Pretty much built with the windows leaked. Okay. We had electrical problems. Both of these houses, A and B. And B, by the way, was the total opposite. Should have called that A, right? B was perfect quality. No problems. Unbelievable. House that builder built, okay, for us. Same materials, same tools. Had I gone into either house with some audit and audited the workmen in terms of how well they swung a hammer, how well they used a saw, or whatever else there was, whatever tool there was, I'm sure all of them would have gotten A marks, top marks, okay? But why did my roof leak in the first house? You see what I'm saying? The reason it leaked is because of the things you cannot see. I'll give you a case in point. I went to my builder in house A, the poor quality house, and said to him, hey, Lloyd, I don't like the way that looks right there. You know what his comment was to me? You know, he says, everybody has their opinion. Really? Everybody? I said, I don't give a damn about everybody. By the way, I didn't say it that nicely either. I'm the customer. I don't matter. That was his attitude. I had another builder that put the wrong roof on the house. I wanted a 40-year roof. He put a 20-year roof on. His attitude to me was, you know, you didn't realize how many, there's 17,000 part numbers that go into building a house. Did you realize that? I go, no, I didn't. Oh, so he's writing off putting on the wrong roof to that. I said, for crying out loud, it's not like you put the wrong hinges on my kitchen cabinets that can easily be changed out. It's a roof. I'm just glad you don't fly airplanes, okay? With that attitude, this is what I'm talking about. Now, let me talk to you about house number B. the good quality house. The builder's name was George. And I'm in the house one day as his workmen are there. And he goes, Mark, I want to show you something. He points, doesn't matter what it was. He points to a part of the house. I don't like the way that came out. And we're going to redo it, just to let you know. I didn't complain about it. I mean, if I told him, George, I don't think you have to. I'm fine with that. It's good. Leave it alone. No. Nope, absolutely not, Mark. I can't have that. Nope, that's not the way it's supposed to be done. We're going to fix that. That's why that house didn't leak. That's why that house didn't have problems. Where do you see that when you look at the Danaher business system or the flight deck or UTC used to have ACE? Where do you see that when you look at the Toyota production system? Where do you see that? You don't see it. That's what they were talking about in 1990. What they need to know, they cannot see. Okay? That's good enough. Don't worry about it. I learned from Toyota that if you have a rework part, and I don't care what it is, the integrity of that part is compromised forever. That's their almost religious philosophy. Where do you see that in flight deck? Where do you see that in DBS? You don't see that, okay? And I don't care if it's a scratch on a car and they have to touch it up and you'll never see the scratch again. Their attitude is that part has been compromised. That car has been compromised because it didn't come out perfect the first time, okay? All mindset. What happens when the andon light goes on? Anybody can put up an andon light. How many times have you seen andon lights go on and it's business as usual? Nobody even noticed they're on. I was at a Japanese supplier. Matter of fact, it was Hitachi, making air conditioners. And when the andon light went on, it was like a fire drill. The maintenance guys came out on a golf cart with all their tools, okay? And if the machine wasn't up in 15 minutes, the plant manager got called in. If the machine wasn't up in a half an hour, the president got called down. How many people do that today when your andon lights go on? I've been at companies where andon lights are going on, almost look like a casino with all the lights going on, and everybody's just ignoring the lights. So you go through all this work, you put up all the electronics, you put all the lights up. Half the shop has red lights flashing, and nobody's doing anything. One company I was at, when they had a red light go on for a down machine, I said, what happens next? Oh, we fill out a work order, you put it in the envelope, and the next day the maintenance department comes by and picks up the work order. And how long after that is it going to get fixed? Well, they put it in a queue and they come back within a week or so and they'll fix the machine. Think about that. What if that was life support? What if you're taking an operation, you had oxygen or something, okay? And the oxygen machine went down and the surgeon said, well, why don't you write a work order for that and get maintenance out here to fix it as soon as they can, okay? See, that sense of urgency is what I'm talking about. That's what you can't see. So were we expert at that at Danaher? No. But we did a good enough job where we started living to these principles and to the sense of urgency. You know, we had the notion that said, hey, you want to make your year, you make your quarter. You want to make your quarter, you make your month. You want to make your month, you make your week. You want to make your week, you make your day. And if you want to make your day, you make the hour. And everything mattered, okay? And again, I'm not sitting here saying that just because we decided that's what our attitude was going to be, that Nirvana happened and we saw the light and the sky opened and the sun shone and we were just there. We just arrived. We didn't arrive. We had to work towards that, okay? Especially with new acquisitions as they came in. Total mindset shift, all right? So these are the kind of things that you have to think about when you're putting a business system in place. So if you look at the Danaher business system, we didn't invent anything new, okay? We creatively benchmarked Toyota and some other companies as well, okay? And we did, by the way. I remember calling Land's End, wanting to find out how they did customer service because at the time they were really good at it. We talked to Disney as to how they trained their people, okay? We were in the entertainment business. We were in the catalog clothing business. But we want to learn best practices from different people. And that's, by the way, there's a very big company out there today, which I'm not going to, you'll know who it is, where the top lean guy said, we got all the lean resources we need right here. We don't need to learn from anybody else. Yep. Top lean guy reports to the CEO, okay, of a multi-billion dollar company. That's the attitude, right? We don't need to learn from anybody else. They're going to fail, okay? They're going to fail. So just think about The Flash of Genius. Go see that movie. 2008 it came out. It's a great movie. It really is a good movie. And, you know, look for the invisible here. Look for the invisible. That's really where this is at. Look at the behaviors. I guess people want to call that culture, right? Are we really solving problems versus just putting a patch on it and fixing it so we can get by and ship that last product for the month just to have that problem rear its ugly head the next month or 2 months later or a year later, you know? So, and again, one of the other things that on that visit to Toyota that was really impressive to me was they said a world-class company versus one that's not is based on how they solve problems. He said, even the great Toyota, he joked a little bit. He said, even the great Toyota has problems, but we only solve our problems once. That hit us really hard. Because what he was saying is we don't fix problems. We don't put patches on problems. When a circuit board goes out on a machine, the solution is not to get a new circuit board and get that machine back up and running. The solution is to look at the process that we have, our maintenance process, our TPM process, and find out what went wrong. Why didn't we detect that board? Why weren't we, you know, preemptive? Why weren't we, you know, predictive, whatever it might be? That's the mindset we look at, where I've been at companies where the Gemba meetings are, hey, Charlie, when's that board coming in? It's coming in at 2 o'clock, Joe, but we're going to have that machine up by 3 o'clock running this afternoon. Oh, great. And done. We're done. That's problem solving. They check it off and everything's great. That's not problem solving. You see the mindset. That's what made the Danaher Business System successful. Okay. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm talking on both sides of my mouth, but the tools are important. Don't get me wrong. Because you can misuse the tools, and I see it all the time, especially with standard work, especially with strategy deployment. But you got to be really good at the tools, but that's not enough. And that was what made Danaher great, because of the leadership that we had, the understanding that we developed. But it doesn't happen overnight. Okay. I'll leave you with that. Flash of Genius, 2008, Greg Kinnear played the engineer of Robert Kearns on the intermittent windshield wiper. Great movie. Take a look at it. But this is why DBS was successful. Now, I don't know about the Danaher Business System today. I heard some things that I think they're losing their way. Their numbers might suggest they are, even though they're great numbers still. Don't get me wrong. I've met a lot of people coming out of Danaher that I just shake my head saying, wow, that's not how we thought about DBS, okay? Not all. There's some good ones that came out, but it's spotty. It's not consistent. And, you know, they had such great growth, and every company that they own today is different than it was when I was there. They don't own any of the companies anymore. They went totally different biotech type scientific, you know, industry. Totally different model and a totally different mindset. And a totally different culture. Matter of fact, one leader told me that their president said, DBS doesn't apply to us because, this is at Danaher, DBS doesn't apply to us because we're scientific, we're a different type of company. This doesn't apply to us. Okay, so I don't know what to do with that. I don't know what you do with that, to be honest with you. But George Sherman would never let that happen. Okay. Matter of fact, at one of the executive conferences, he said to me, Mark, what message do we need to send to the troops? I said, George, just that DBS isn't optional. That's it. And that made all the difference in the world. Now, it didn't mean he had to do it the exact same way, because every implementation is got to be customized to the culture and to the people and to your product and to your industry, okay, and to your situation and to your problems, okay? But the Danaher Business System was an option. And we put into policy deployment, strategy deployment, aggressive goals where traditional management was not going to allow, you weren't going to get there with traditional thinking. You had to change. And again, those are multifunctional teams that could deploy those objectives. And that was another, incentive for people to think differently about breakthrough. We didn't say, hey, look, we want to improve quality this year by 5%. We had a corporate mandate that said at minimum 50%, and even that may not be enough. Lead time the same way. So we're looking for really aggressive movements in these goals that force you to think differently about it. You can't just improve a suboptimal. If you have a suboptimal framework or a suboptimal process and you try an improvement, you'll never be great. You have to rethink that framework. You have to rethink that process. Okay. And really, when you get right down to it, strategy deployment is one big problem-solving tool that creates processes or greatly improves them that deliver sustainable results. We weren't just interested in the results. We were interested in the process. That once we relegated that process back to daily management, it always performed at a breakthrough level. That was the whole idea. Okay. These little things I'm telling you right now are what made DBS what it was. Okay. Anyway, I'll stop there. Episode 62, why the Danaher Business System was successful. And the answer may surprise you. Now, you tell me if it surprised you. Maybe it didn't. You can email me at mark@lean911.com with your comments, with your questions, with your stories, with your disagreements. Okay. And I'll be happy to get back to you. Okay. Stay lean, guys. Bye.